Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show features my conversation with original freedom writer Kanya Hack Sims and actress and activist Jackie Nahn. We discuss Jackie and Kanya's devastating experiences with discrimination, how the coronavirus pandemic has underscored the effects of harmful Asian stereotypes, and what we can all do to stop Asian American Pacific Islander hate. Our conversation is thought-provoking and sheds light on how prevalent Asian American hate is today. I hope this episode will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. On March 6th, 2021, a gunman opened fire at three separate spas and massage parlors in Atlanta, Georgia. Of the eight victims killed in this brutal attack, six were women of Asian descent. While the shooting has yet to be officially declared a hate crime, it stands as a horrific reminder of the increasing hostility against Asian Americans during the coronavirus pandemic. According to a study conducted by Pew Research, 31% of Asian Americans have reported experiencing racial slurs or jokes during the first 6 months of the lockdown. And as the pandemic has persisted, this problem has only gotten worse. In today's episode, I'm joined by two incredible voices for the Asian American community, Jackie Nahn and Kanya Hack Sims. Kanya is an original freedom writer who came to the United States with her family as a refugee fleeing the Cambodian genocide. While in my classroom, Kanya learned how to process the trauma from her childhood through writing. Unfortunately, for many of her family members, this past year's events have brought with it terrible reminders of that genocidal experience in their home country and has triggered their PTSD. Our other guest, Jackie Nahn, is an actress and activist who many of you will remember as the character Cindy from the Freedom Writers feature film. Jackie has experienced firsthand discrimination against Asian Americans as an actress working in Hollywood, and now inspires others to join the fight against the harmful stereotypes that suppress Asian actors. Without further ado, here is my courageous conversation with Jackie Nahn and Kanya Hack Sims.
The movement to put an end to violence and discrimination against Asian Americans over the weekend, rallies taking place all over the country following the shooting spree last week in Atlanta that targeted three Asian spas. Eight people killed, six of them were Asian women. Supporters have been using the hashtags Stop Asian Hate and I Stand With Asians to show solidarity.
It's strange to say that I'm both excited and sad about why we are gathered here today. The reason I'm excited is I'm gonna have a chit chat with two young women who I revere and cherish and who are storytellers, and their stories are global. Kanya is an original freedom writer and her story is a part of the Freedom Writer's Diary. Jackie is a beloved actress and was able to take a combination of Kanya and a freedom writer named Bunny and bring their stories to life in the Freedom Writers film. And so for years, people have been reading and watching their stories unfold. But the reason we are gathering today is there's this sense of urgency and a call to action and the hashtag Stop Asian American Pacific Islander Hate. Because the world is not right, the world is not normal. And there's been so many hate crimes, not just here in America, but abroad. So we're gonna talk about race. We're gonna talk about inequality. We're gonna talk about people who are bullies at bully pulpits and fan those fires. It's gonna be emotional, it's gonna be telling, and it's gonna be personal. And so what I wanna do first and foremost is do a little temperature check for both of you, because this wave of hate crimes is so real and so relevant in your lives and in your community. How are you feeling about our subject today, hashtag Stop AAPI Hate?
I'm so angry, upset, scared for my family, for my sons, for everybody. We can't be numb to this. We can't allow this to go on. It's not okay at all.
What I love about my sweet Tanya is, as a Freedom Marcher, she's an activist, not just an author, but she's also an advocate for the whole human race. And so I love that even though we're speaking specifically of discrimination within the Asian community, you are a humanist and you don't want discrimination in any community. So I'm proud of that. Jackie,
yeah.
Your face is on the screen. Your face is in people's homes on their TV sets and for all those cool kids on their gadgets. So what I love about you, about being a storyteller on the big screen, is you have credibility. People look at you and say, I look like you, and I talk like you, and I want to be like you. So if there's a kid at home that wants to be like you, how could you empower them about using their voice during these uncertain times?
Yes. Thank you so much for that. I mean, I think for me personally, it had always been a struggle to imagine myself being seen in a Hollywood kind of way, to actually be in a film and be seen. And I think being someone who's, you know, Filipino or, you know, Southeast Asian, someone who's, you know, with this complexion as an Asian person, being seen on films so new for me, and it trips me out. I think back at like being in the film and I'm like, I can't believe I was actually able to, in a way, to channel Kanya and Bunny and to channel myself, to represent myself. It is insane to me when I think about it because I didn't have that growing up. It's an honor to be able to represent and to have a voice. And I think, you know, what I would say to them is push hard and kick it and bite, because that's what we have to do.
I want to go to you, my sweet Kanya, because what you wrote about in the Freedom Writer's Diary about wanting desperately to be perceived as a lotus flower. Taking what Jackie said about being of Asian descent, you were not the model minority. Being poor and being a genocide survivor yourself. Tell our listeners about what that image of a lotus flower is and how you want to project, how you want to be seen.
Model. I never thought of myself as a model. If anything, I thought of myself as being invisible. You know, my parents survived the genocide, and when it came to America, you know, it's just the language barrier, the cultural difference, being different, you know, being the skin tone that I am. You know, I was always picked on growing up throughout school, you know, throughout my whole life until you came into my life. I was pretty much felt like I didn't matter. I was invisible. I didn't care about anything. Like, coming from a country, war-torn country that slaughtered almost 2 million people, and just coming here, there's like this heaviness of that I always felt like, why, you know, why did this happen to me? Like, why am I like normal other kids? I always felt like, why couldn't I have been born to a different family or a different culture? I always like yearned to be somebody else that I wasn't throughout my whole life until I really had to do some inner work and dig deep and to really come to terms and acceptance of who I am and living my story. And then being able to tell my story from a place of, I went through that, all the pain, you know, trying to be somebody I'm not, trying to be cool, being bullied, you know, to just somebody believing in me. You know, I grew up where we weren't allowed to play with other kids that were not Asians. The Mexican kids didn't want to play with us, and they called us, you know, dog eaters. And I would walk a certain way, avoiding, you know, the house, knowing that I would be bullied going, crossing, you know, their fence. It was not until room, you know, 203 that I didn't see colors. It wasn't about identifying that that person is this color and that color. It was just, that was Tiffany. No, that was Erica. You know, that was Tony.
You know, I mentioned the lotus flower because Kanya writes about this image. And a lotus flower, as she writes, is this beautiful, dainty flower that grows out of the mud and the muck. and is so regal, and you are so regal, and you portray her and Bunny alike. So the scene in the film that I think you did so beautifully is you're coming into your ninth grade year, and when Kanya and Bunny were coming out of junior high, they put on this persona that they were really tough, and they kind of dressed like gangsters, and it was an act. You know, if I look tough and I act tough, then I'm not going to get bullied. Yeah. And in the scene in the film where you are asked to stand on the line.
How many of you have been in juvenile hall or jail for any length of time?
Does the refugee camp count?
You decide.
Unbeknownst to you, Kanya was born in a refugee camp. So you embodied that moment. And I think in the film, when you make that decision to actually step forward and stand on that line, you're paying homage to a family torn apart by a genocide in Cambodia. So what does that feel like to be in that presence?
Oh my God. Right now I'm just like, I didn't know that. I mean, I think for me at the time, you know, because I was a teenager going through my own little microcosm of something very similar, like in the sense of, you know, just being kind of an outcast, you know, in my own personal life. I just was kind of in my own like bubble of like, I'm just bringing this character to life that I can relate to. And now, so many years later, as an adult looking back at it, I'm riveted by how there's so much of a parallel. It's almost, it's like how they say like intergenerational trauma or like, you know, just all these like, it's almost like this weird, like, it's like a sci-fi connection of like, you know, of emotions and like intersecting like histories. And I think it's really beautiful. And I feel really honored and riveted. I'm like, oh my God, I had no idea. But at the same time, there's this intuition and this feeling of knowing too that that it's so meaningful. There was something so real about it that I did feel in my gut about this story, even though I didn't know this actual fact, you know? And I think that that's kind of magical and amazing, you know? And I just feel really honored to have been able to like participate, just lend myself to like help bring, you know, the story to life and get it whatever it needs for other people to be able to learn from it.
You both have talked about with your Asian culture, there seems to be this unspoken hierarchy. Both of you have grandparents who were of Chinese descent. You also have Chinese and Cambodian descent, and you are Chinese and Filipino. Mm-hmm. You both mentioned skin color. When I look at you guys, you're beautiful. You're just, you know, like any Southern California kid. You've been kissed by the sun. But there, let's talk about skin color, because it's almost this unspoken rule that if you have been kissed by the sun, that's a bad thing. And I want to understand that for those that don't understand that kind of intrinsic racism and socioeconomic bonds within the Asian community, is skin color a factor?
Automatically, you're just kind of coded, oh, this person is from that socioeconomic background and their education, blah, 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 already. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like,
seriously.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes. Socioeconomic profiling and beauty standards,
yes.
Too. Like, I remember, I mean, I've heard it in my family, I hate to say it, but it's like, I was born this color, you know, I was sun-kissed out the womb.
Yeah.
And the womb got me. And, you know, it's like, there's always a little bit extra excitement when, like, a baby's born and they're more, like, porcelain skin, you know? Like, beautiful girl, you know? It's like, darker brown girl. Okay. You know what I mean? It's sad, but it's true. I mean, it's a real thing. You know, I think colorism in the Asian community is a real thing that a lot of people don't want to talk about, or is not really talked about.
It's not talked about.
It's not talked
it's
about,
kind of
but
like,
it's known.
Yes.
You know?
It's just
so let's talk about it. I'm fascinated by this. Do you feel that there's clearly prejudice against the darker shades?
Yes.
Is there a hierarchy, do you think, even the shades that are represented on a screen?
Absolutely.
On a television? So tell me about that, for those of us, to try to stop that prejudice from being perpetuated.
Oh my goodness. I mean, absolutely. I mean, for myself, like, all the Asian actresses or Asian, all the Asian people that would be on film, you know, on the silver screen would always be most identify as East Asian, so usually the lighter skin, Chinese, Japanese, Korean. And I'm not, that is not to say there's no such thing as, you know, anyone from those groups that are of a darker skin shade, but what I mean is that, you know, to be a light-skinned Asian person or to be fair-skinned is always just like the most visible in pop culture, in the media, and in all media, you know what I mean? And it's like from TV to film, all the way down to like households. I mean, it's historical too. It's like, you know, if you're brown skin, that means you're out in the sun because you're a farmer or a slave, a servant. You know what I mean? It's all tied to those things, you know. And it's crazy to think that even now in 2021, it's like just now I feel like there is a little more visibility for Southeast Asian culture. You know, but for so long, I feel like Freedom Riders was like the first movie I can really think of where you saw someone who's a character who's Cambodian, mm-hmm. you know? And then, I mean, there are other like few like independent films that may have like done that as well, yes, but not in like a big like film like this, or, you know, you don't really have brown Asians on TV, you know?
But let's talk about makeup. I think what's really disturbing is in that color spectrum, the power and disturbing way of bleaching.
Oh my God.
And whitening. And that's like a whole industry. Can we talk about that? I think a lot of men don't know the pressures for women, especially in that spectrum with, you know, the Freedom Riders, with our African American Freedom Riders, or Latino Freedom Riders, or Asian Americans, there was always this feeling the lighter you were mm-hmm. within that particular ethnicity. Mm-hmm. And so can you talk about that weird pressure of bleaching skin or whitening skin or not tanning mm-hmm. and how that's being perpetuated by the beauty industry?
Mm-hmm. I'm born like this. I'm considered darker tone within my community. And so my older sister, she's fair skin. So, you know, even within my own family, there's like this difference. And right now what's going on is that they're selling beauty cream products that are whitening. And just most recently, a friend of mine gave me some samples of some whitening creams. But it's huge business. And I know friends, like noon time, mm-hmm. they're inside and they're covered up. And if they're driving, they have long sleeves, you know, driving, they covered up with hats, everything. They don't come out, sunscreen all the way.
Yeah.
Just because within our community, the more fair skin, you're treated as more prevalent, as more like upper class.
Mm-hmm.
And the dark you are, it means that you're from, you know, mm-hmm. you're a farmer, you're out in the sun, you're out in the fields. Why can't we just accept people as who they are?
Mm-hmm.
Just as your unique beauty that you've been blessed with. I have a gap in my teeth. And for a long time, I tried to put braces to close it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just learned to accept and embrace my gap.
Well, you know what I love that we're doing with this courageous conversation today is it's the people that have the power
mm-hmm.
that have to do more than just putting out a statement. You know, if you watch any television right now, everyone is putting out these statements for their network or radio ads or even companies. But you can't just put out a statement, you have to do.
Absolutely.
So what I'd love to say, hired you.
Yeah.
Our book spotlights
exactly.
you. So what does that mean about giving voice to the potpourri of communities that you're from, the colors of skin that you represent? How important is that for young people to see that representation?
Oh my God, I think it's extremely important. I think it's like, you know, I think there's a lot of, there's also a belief that I've heard this before too, because as like an Asian actor, you know, people will say, oh, well, there are lesser Asian roles. So that means that there's lesser Asian actors. So there's less competition. So it's easier for you, you know? And it's like, no, actually that means there's less opportunity. So there's less growth, you know, for Asian actors. And, you know, fact of the matter is, like, I have a bigger chance of booking a role that is open to all ethnicities as opposed to an Asian role, because especially growing up, didn't see me as the typical Asian girl. Like, I don't condone this at all, but the stereotype of nerdy, fair-skinned, geeky Asian girl who's really good at school, like, that was so never ever me, you know? And as an actor, it's like that, even now as I speak, that's not me. And I would have a bigger chance of booking ethnicity attached to a role, but it's just all about character. So anyway, that being said, I feel like, yeah, the powers that be do need to have more opportunities, but also people that want to do something, like Asian people that want to act, for instance, they shouldn't let the fact that it's such a small, there's less visibility stop them. Because I think some, and I've heard this before, where they're like, oh, well, there aren't that many good Asian actors. Oh, no, there's not many good roles for Asian actors because there's not many good Asian actors. Excuse me. I mean, then it becomes a conversation like chicken or the egg. It's like, well, maybe if there was more importance, more value added to the idea of Asian people in the arts, you know, instead of like being pressured to be something else because they feel that there's no room for them in whatever Hollywood, you know. So it's just, it's a lot of different things, it's a back and forth. But
I think what's going to happen that's interesting in 2021 is hindsight is 2020. So we can look back, and I think of some of the films that I saw when I was younger. You know, a John Hughes film had such horrific Asian caricatures.
Oh my God.
And there's moments that are cringeworthy. And I think we are perpetuating these stereotypes.
Absolutely.
On the screen. And it becomes innocuous. People think, well, it's in a movie, so that's the way it is.
It's okay, yeah. Actually, that's Kanye and I just earlier were talking about how often, like, the Asian community is always like the butt of jokes, you know? And I think it's because of this like historical narrative in media, in TV and film that Hollywood perpetuates, that is like, it's okay to make fun of Asian people because they've been a caricature for so long and it still carries on today, you know? And then the Trump administration using all that really terrible rhetoric into now, where it's like, now it's obvious, it was always a terrible joke, it was always racism, but now people, it's just violence.
Yeah.
It's not just bullying and, you know, mean, like, oh, come on, laugh at it, take a joke. No, it's actual, now it's culminated into violence. And so now where are we at, you know?
You are a survivor and your parents are survivors of a genocide. And so what I intuitively knew that could happen, happened. When the pandemic hit, your mom was triggered, as so many survivors, you know, when you're having food taken off shelves, and those, you know, those first few weeks of the pandemic where we didn't have enough information. I'm sure your mother, who lived through a war, went to a refugee camp, came to America very poor, psychologically probably had a lot of triggers. Mm-hmm. And then to hear the then president say, the China flu or the Kung flu, and to perpetuate that from a place of power. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that for you, because you were living that truth of seeing your mother panicking and fearful, and society panicking and fearful. Mm-hmm. And then someone in a place of authority and power perpetuating these horrible stereotypes. Mm-hmm. So what was that like initially when you heard those horrible stereotypes? And he was never held accountable. And then others also uttered those horrible stereotypes.
It's just all triggered symptoms of like a civil war. You know, it started political statements like that. And just, you know, like what happened in Cambodia, and, you know, that they took over. For example, they tell people in the city, in Phnom Penh, to pack all your stuff, you know, and to leave the city. You're going to be coming back in a few days. So they left the city with just, you know, whatever they can carry with them into the jungles, into the fields. But they didn't know that they were being led off to be killed.
The Pol Pot regime in Cambodia, the Khmer Rouge, targeted one half of Kanye's family. They went after the intelligentsia. They went after people who were learned and scholarly, who knew better, who could fight back. So half of your family was being tricked into giving up all their worldly possessions, lured to their death. Mm-hmm. And then on your father's side, because they were working the land, they were also suddenly put on this pedestal because they weren't fighting back. So that the second this pandemic hit, your mother must have been that young girl in Cambodia.
Yes. Again the whole thing, it's just like we went to Costco, how many trips a day. Our house became like a storefront, you know, with like how many toilet papers or supplies. And it was just like, you know, going back to the war, even something like salt that we take for granted and only costs a few, less than a dollar, was like worth more than gold. You know, there was nothing to eat. And then all of that, and she kept saying, you don't know how it is to not have food to eat. And I was like, oh my God, like, I really don't. And I really feel bad. Even my aunt talks about it, like, she didn't have her period for years because there was no food.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people don't realize is for survivors, Holocaust survivors, genocide survivors, when you're starving, your body shuts off because your body intuitively knows I can't carry a child to term. So the fact that your mom stopped having her period, it's a blessing that she got it back to have you. But I know that must have been so painful for her because I don't think she was ready to be a mother when she conceived you.
Yeah, no, my parents were outraged. They kind of, you know, they paired you off with, I don't know, it was just like a jungle, a mess that you gave people power and they took it out of hand and they went to war. And they were hungry to kill people off. Mm. I don't understand, you know, till today I don't understand that something like that so horrific can happen. And it starts with the comments of going back to your darker skin. Starts something small as, oh yeah, you know, you're fat. Oh, yes, the labeling, those like small remarks that kind of builds momentum over time. Like, oh yeah, you know, say that to me again. And then after a while, and then this culminates into this hatred and it got acted out.
My heart is breaking. And I know that for you as an activist, what I've loved watching is your activism rise in this moment of speaking up and speaking out. And so what was that like, knowing folks that did come here out of necessity and wanting to know if there's this American dream, and then Americans saying things like a China flu,
Americans
saying Kung Flu, Americans fetishizing women.
Oh my God.
So talk about that, because I know you're an activist
and I
know you're feeling her pain right now.
Absolutely, I mean, yeah.
Talk about those feelings of watching these things unfold over this last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's surreal, but at the same time, it's something that, and it's really horrible to say, but it's something that's been known. I think that everything is just boiling over right now, which is absolutely unacceptable. And it's a shame that it's had to come to this. But I mean, it's just like the rage and anguish is just like, I remember when I first heard about what happened in Atlanta.
And we're going to start in Atlanta because there are fears this morning that a string of deadly shootings at massage parlors in the Atlanta area could be linked to a wave of attacks against Asian Americans. 8 people were killed in the city and at least 1 wounded in those attacks yesterday night. And at least half of the victims are believed to be Asian women. The suspect arrested 150 miles away after a chase is a white man. His name is Robert Aaron Long.
I knew what happened. I found, you know, I read the articles and this and that. But after that, after immediately reading, I kind of like shut off. I like was like, I don't want to think right now about it. I just don't want to think because I was so furious. Like, so furious because not only have just women's bodies been abused throughout all of history, but Asian women being basically sacrificed because of a white supremacist, like, insane person who now, and then how the media wanted to turn it into, oh, well, you know, he's a sex addict. Oh, he was having a bad day. And then like people in power just being like, ah. And it's like, you know, a black kid will get shot for having a toy in his pocket that he's reaching for. But this guy who plans an attack to kill these women and somehow kind of rationalizes it because it's like, oh, well, they're sex workers. They could have been sex workers. It's a seedy place. I mean, to me, it all ties into this idea of colonialism and also just like Asian women being fetishized all throughout history. Oh, well, they're complimenting you. That's just like a compliment. You're a hot Asian girl. Oh, well, you know, Asian girls, da da da, all this stuff. And it's not a compliment. It's to say someone is beautiful is a compliment, but to fetishize them is a totally different thing. And you're basically weaponizing. Suddenly your own identity becomes a weapon to yourself because they've turned you into that. So, oh, because these individuals were Asian sex workers. Okay, so they got gunned down. Whatever. No, it's not whatever. It's not okay.
And it was victim shaming.
Victim shaming, yes.
I love that you talked about, the gunman, for those that don't live in America, was a young Caucasian man. I think it was like in 1920, a self-proclaimed sex addict. And he targeted these massage parlors.
Yeah.
So we don't even know if these women were just going there for their day
job. Exactly.
And suddenly these women got vilified.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Instead of being the victim,
Suddenly
they were shamed.
Yeah.
And they were targeted, and it was methodical.
Exactly.
And so let's go back to that, that fetishizing. I think that's really important for young people to understand that you are a human being. You're not a caricature. You're not a sex symbol.
Yes.
And how wrong and degrading that is.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's terrible. I can't remember the actual, it was a law that from like, I think 1831 or something, where Asian women were not allowed to migrate to America because they just assumed that they would be prostitutes, you know? And it's just like, whoa, you know, our entire existence has been colored by, has been hypersexualized because of someone else, not because of us at all.
It's not your narrative. It's someone else's narrative.
Yes, exactly. Or like our narrative has been shaped by someone completely outside of us, and we are now being subjected to all these weird, crazy, like violences, and it's just like, what? You know what I mean? And absolutely, it's a big one, I think, you know? And I think it does boil down to visibility, representation, you know, like Asian women not just being like a hot, like sex object or like kung fu fighting sex object. You know what I mean? Like we're people. We're just normal people.
So I'm assuming for both of you, there's gotta be this fear factor. Because I know that both of you were so engaged in Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. You're activists, and this is a year of social protesting and racial reckoning. And then the violence. And we saw these acts of violence in a subway in New York, or on the streets of San Francisco, or an older woman in San Jose. So we started seeing these moments that were deliberate and targeted attacks. So did you personally ever feel afraid? Did you ever feel judged when you left your cocoon, your bubble, and went out into the world?
I feel like that right now. Mm-hmm. I never had to feel like that before. But now, as the media is bringing this to light, I now have to look left and right when I enter the car, or, you know, I don't know if I'm parking my car next door and so-and-so next to me is feeling triggered and all the things that I'm the, like, you know, because of you, the coronavirus, which I have no clue, you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm fearful now. I don't know what's gonna happen. Like, I can't live normal lives. Mm-hmm. I can't go to the grocery store without thinking that I'm being judged or, you know, going shopping or being treated differently just because of the way I look. Mm-hmm. Like, what is happening right now? Mm-hmm. I've felt that growing up, but now it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Have you felt that as well?
You know, I think for me, it's been a really weird, I've been dealing and coping in a very strange way, because I can be very just like, hold on, don't want to deal. But basically, like, for me, it's kind of been from the outside. It's like more from coming from my outside circle and then circling into me. So I am the most anxious right now. I just keep thinking about like my parents and my aunts and uncles, because so many, you know, elderly Asian people have been targeted, and I'm just like, and they go to, you know, They're out and about. Like, they're not, of course, they're at home most of the time, but they're going to the stores. They're going, my dad's getting gas somewhere. And I keep thinking, like, oh my God, what if something happens? Because they're so helpless.
Right.
So that is something that's, like, constantly on my mind. Mm-hmm. And then as I started hearing more stories, then I started thinking about all the Asian women. And I get so scared. I get really anxious. I'm like, oh my God, I hope nothing ever happens to them when they're, like, walking to their car or anything. And then when I think about me, I'm just like, ooh, someone better try it.
Oh,
I'm in that place right now. I'm in that place. I'm so mad.
Yeah. I love that Jackie talked about it was the older, more vulnerable mm-hmm. who seemed to be the targets. And in the age of cell phones, thank God, we're seeing these images mm-hmm. of elders just walking and being attacked and pummeled and sometimes fighting back, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But because your mother is elderly, what is that fear for you? You know, you were already afraid with the pandemic, and now it's the fear of she's lived through a war. Mm-hmm. There can't be a war in this country, and it's an invisible war. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now I'm like fearful for her to even walk out the house, mm-hmm. just because, or anybody to walk out the house, I'm just afraid. Like, why are they being targeted? They can't fight back. Mm-hmm. And then within the Asian culture, they're not going to be loud about it and express it, or, you know what I mean? It's just in our culture, we're taught to suppress things. It's kind of like there's a mentality within even my culture, I don't know if it's yours, but it's like the more you pressure, you just like, oh, you're going to fail. But it's kind of like the backward thinking, like you're going to fail, but so you can win. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they don't like to compliment you. Mm-hmm. They like to put you down so that you can bring yourself up. Mm-hmm. So with this is coming up, they're kind of just kind of brace it, and that's not acceptable. Like, why do you have to hurt somebody who's so innocent? And I tried to explain what's happening to an 8-year-old, and I asked him, did you create the coronavirus because he's Asian? He's like, no, I don't know anything, you know? And it's like, but that doesn't make sense, auntie. I'm like, exactly. How do you explain racism to an 8-year-old? He's like, I don't agree. Like, if you have issues with somebody, why do you have to take it out on them with violence?
Mm-hmm. And it's not just it's the words. Let's go back to the words. Mm-hmm. What I love, you're a writer, and your livelihood is through words. And what I love that you were able to do in your stories is to identify those words that are really hurtful. And so I want to talk about when people stand idly by and don't say anything. Like, if you've been in mixed company before mm-hmm. and you've heard something racist, I believe that the Freedom Riders are now in a place where we stand up and we speak up, mm-hmm. but not everybody does that. So have you ever been out and about and called something so horrifically racist, and people went about their business and people didn't interrupt and people didn't say that's horrible? Has that ever happened to you?
Oh yeah, it has. Oh yeah, Chinese. Oh, you know, you guys create the coronavirus, like...
They've said that to you. They've said that
to you. Yeah, like, oh, yeah. Like, I sent some Chinese New Year, because I'm half Chinese. Oh, that's the coronavirus New Year. I was, like, so ignorant.
Have you ever been called a derogatory or racist term, and people didn't stand up for you?
Well, yeah, when I was a kid, like, growing up in elementary school and middle school, yeah. I mean, there's the bullying and stuff like that. They would just call me Chinese.
Chinese, yeah.
And that's not like an actual, like, to be Chinese, there's nothing wrong with that, but to just have that just be like vilify you.
Correct.
And it's just like, you, well, you're Chinese. Oh, little Chinita. Oh, duh.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, little China. And that was like, it would just be like groups of kids doing that, you know? And it's just like,
okay, and so, teachers didn't intervene, or
just never talked about, like, really. Yeah. And
how do you go, who do you say it
yeah,
to?
Yeah. And it's so embarrassing.
It
it's interesting. You know, then you feel ashamed and embarrassed.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you kind of like take on the blame for whatever reason. And then you just don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really sad, but you internalize all that pain. And I think, you know, as we're talking about, like, with words and everything, it's like, it's this, like, violence of the mind. It's this violence in our words, you know, that is not now, like, it's being enacted in so many ways, which is so, like, terrifying, you know, but it absolutely starts with the language. It starts with words.
So I love that our audience is always this beautiful fusion of, you know, really proactive parents, you know, talented teachers, and then the youth. And so if you could look right at that parent or that teacher, tell them the importance of words and about not standing idly by and not being silent when they hear these things. Like, give them a mandate, give them a mission to leave this call to action feeling emboldened. What could you say to those individuals?
I would say, like, if you hear something, I think that sometimes you need to be an advocate for somebody else who doesn't have a voice. Because sometimes, most of the time, the person who's being the victim doesn't know, and probably is not used to having to stand up. So if you hear something, somebody making kind of comments that are not respectful, then you say, you know what, that's not really nice. Well, why did you have to say that? Mm-hmm. We should become a society of that. That's not okay. Or within our own family, within our communities, and even as we see it, that's not okay to make those remarks. Like, why are we being picked? You know, what is this becoming? And what are we continuing to allow? And it starts with the words. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it. You don't know the effects and the trauma of that one word, calling that person that dark skin, that ugly. You don't know how much damage that can really eat at that person.
I think my favorite scene of you in the feature film, Jackie, is the character Ava, who's your friend April Hernandez, is having this kind of tearful moment with the teacher, Hillary Swank, who, it's so weird when I met her because she really got all my quirks down. She's a great dog.
But
Ava's kind of emotional, and you walk in, and throughout the film, you guys were rivals. And that simple gesture of makeup, and that simple gesture of you saying, I got your color, is so simple, and yet it's not simple. It's so profound. Mm-hmm. So I love that moment of two rivals coming together. Mm-hmm. And I think because you guys were both coming from a minority position, it was this beautiful kinship suddenly.
Absolutely.
So tell me what that scene was like to film, and did you know when you were filming it that it would be one of those moments that made a lot of people weep?
You know, at the time when I was filming it, no, I didn't realize that it would be a moment that would make it was like a tearjerker. But now that I look back at it, you know, I feel like that scene is exactly what we need right now. I think it's so beautiful that so many people that, like BLM, totally supports, you know, stop Asian hate, you know? And I think Ava and Cindy, that's exactly what they're doing in their small little, with the little like L'Oreal makeup compact, be like,
I got your color.
You know what I mean? Like,
it goes back to color again.
And it does, like the symbolism of that.
It's so beautiful. But
exactly.
I think what you guys have really done, like passionately, is besides making everyone cry, to feel that they can stand up, to feel that they no longer need to be silent, to feel that they can confront somebody in the line at a grocery store or in a classroom or even on a Zoom meeting. Mm-hmm. So what can you directly tell a child to stop the madness?
Stand up, tell somebody, speak to somebody about it, get it out of their system, to be seen and be heard, but not from a place of violence. We don't need to go there. Mm-hmm. Don't fight fire with fire. You know, I really think that we need to get rid of this race thing. Mm-hmm. We're all one human race. Mm-hmm. We're different countries and location and have different styles and beauty, but we're all one earth. Mm-hmm. And it's one humanity. Mm-hmm. Whenever we think like that, it's more holistic. When we separate ourselves and think, and then it becomes like, oh, I'm better, that's, you're this, I'm that. No, it's not. We all bleed the same. Mm-hmm. We're all feeling the pain. You know, the pandemic has taken lives, bring about issues that we never wanted to think about and talk about. It's all coming out to surface. That because it needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. The more we oppress it and suppress this and saying that everything's all right, it's not all right. It's coming out for a reason. And it's coming out for a reason not so that we can perpetuate the same thing that's been happening. It's coming out for a reason so that we finally detox this and get rid of it. Because I am sick and tired of this shit.
Accidentally on purpose. Can you see the embodiment of this spirit? You were chosen for a reason. So in that spirit and in that feist, take that fire that you have. Yeah. And what would you say to a kid at home?
No, I mean, absolutely. I'm, you know, just to piggyback on everything Kanya just said, absolutely say something, take action. And it sounds a little cheesy, but it's absolutely true. You have to have hope and you have to believe, and it has to be unwavering. Mm-hmm. Like it starts in deep, deep down inside. You have to believe and know. Mm-hmm. It has to be this unwavering belief that I'm human and we are all human and we can really come together and do this. In order to, I think, really believe in that, you have to have hope. Mm-hmm. And I think so much of the violence that's happening is coming from a place of hopelessness, of sadness, of trauma, mm-hmm. of feeling forgotten, of feeling invisible. And we need to remember and we need to believe we are visible, we are here, and we count.
I'm so grateful to our guest, Jackie and Kanya. In their honor, may each of us become advocates, demanding change for those whose voices have been silenced. May we unite together to face hate and injustice as one. And may we all embrace acceptance and stop Asian American Pacific Islander violence and hate. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell. This episode was produced and edited by Matt Martin Hall and Rob Falk. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.